Chapter 14, Moving Forward and Changing Lives. Martha Ruther, Paralympian and former camper. Find the sport you love, work hard, follow your dreams. Don't ever let anyone tell you that you can't do something because you can. You just have to work hard to show yourself and society that we can do more than many people think. Photo description. Martha Ruther, two-time U.S. Paralympic swimmer. The making of a Paralympian. Hey, Martha, have you tried beat baseball yet? I heard a camper hollow across the pool to the blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl with a swimming build. She yelled back, yes, and I'll try it again, she smiled. A group of friends surrounded her, as they always seem to. I had learned to spot potential in every camper, but it didn't take long for me to notice something special about Martha Ruther. It was her first time at Camp Abilities, and I had watched this girl try everything we put in front of her. Her presence made every room brighter because she radiated positivity. Already at the age of 13, this exceptional girl from Allegheny, New York, was bound and determined to make the most of her life. She made lots of friends and left with confidence and the knowledge that she was a good athlete. She and her parents also learned about the Paralympics and how to get involved. In Martha's second year of camp in 2008, she finished the swim meet on competition day with excellent times in the freestyle, backstroke, and breaststroke. But we didn't know just how good her times were until Monica Lepore said, "Hey, Martha, let's look up the qualifying swim times for your gender, age, and level of visual impairment." Their internet search found that Martha's times were equal to the person who came in eighth in the world. This was incredible news for Martha. "You've got to go for the Paralympics," I told her. Competing against swimmers with similar visual impairment would mean a more level playing field than what she found in her school competitions. The spark in her eye told me I need say no more. Over the next 2 years, Martha worked even harder. She continued to cut her times. Her parents signed her up for junior Paralympic competitions all over the United States, and she began to get noticed by coaches and universities. Martha and her parents, Mike and Maureen, were driving all over the country for competitions. Her father once jokingly said to me over the phone, "Yeah, Lauren, thanks. I put over 4,000 miles on my car." In Martha's senior year, she was recruited to Erie University in Pennsylvania on a swimming scholarship. She was thrilled. She was excelling in swimming among her sighted peers and truly making her mark in the world of swimming with visual impairment. She went to Erie University for the first year, but had to travel so much for Paralympic-level competition, she ended up suspending her college studies to swim full-time. She spent hundreds of hours in Colorado Springs training at the Olympic Training Center. I was a member of the board of the United States Association for Blind Athletes for 8 years. In November 2015, as part of my board duties, I was fortunate enough to attend a fundraising breakfast in Colorado Springs. There, I had the amazing opportunity to introduce Martha to the swimmer Tricia Zorn, who was on the USABA board with me. With 41 medals from 6 Paralympics, Tricia was the most decorated Olympian or Paralympian in the world. It gave me great pleasure to watch this Paralympic icon meet an up-and-coming athlete. In 2016, Camp Abilities started a Hall of Fame award. Is it any surprise that Martha was our first inductee? But because Martha was in Colorado Springs training for the upcoming Paralympics, she could not come to receive the award herself. Her parents, Mike and Maureen, came to get her plaque at camp, and we Skyped in Martha at the ceremony. I shared with the campers Martha's journey through camp and onto Paralympic competition. I introduced her parents, and they said a few words, and then when Martha started speaking, you could have heard a pin drop. She spoke of all the places she had traveled for competition, her experiences, and all the friends she had met along the way. This was one of my proudest moments of camp. I could not stop crying and was truly speechless when Martha finished talking. It was such a special event, I didn't want it to end. From the very first day, I imagined Camp Abilities through the thousands of proud moments leading up to this one, I thought I could not have dreamed up a better life. In her competition in Rio, Martha came in 8th in the world. This is exactly what we had predicted all those years before when we saw her potential in swimming against her peers. Martha trained hard for the 2020 Paralympics in Tokyo and made the team once again. But due to COVID-19, the Paralympics were postponed until 2021. So Martha had to train for an additional year to stay in top shape. It was exciting but bittersweet when Martha made the team again because another top swimmer from the United States, Becca Myers, was not allowed to attend. Becca, who has Usher syndrome and is deaf in addition to her visual impairment, won 3 gold medals and 1 silver in Rio in 2016, and a silver and a bronze in London in 2012. But because of COVID, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee was limiting the number of support people who could travel. And they felt Becca did not need a support person, even though she can't travel alone. Martha was terribly disappointed, but pushed forward despite Becca's absence and came in 12th in the 100 butterfly. She treasured the experience and was there for her teammates throughout. Martha showed me just what a difference camp can make in the life of a camper. She continues to be a role model for many people, including me. I recently wrote a chapter for an edited book called Pulling Each Other Along. The editors asked me to write about the people in my life who have helped me arrive at the place I am today. I wrote about my professor, Dr. Monica Lepore, my former student from Perkins, Eddie Martinez, who I taught to ride the unicycle, and I finished the chapter with Martha. Virtual Campabilities. Campabilities 2020. In 2020, we at Campabilities were in high gear for our 25th anniversary. We had received more grants and donations than ever before, including one to hold a 25-hour goalball game, one to buy every child a pair of running sneakers, and one to buy hiking poles to start our hiking program. We had some very accomplished Paralympians slated to join us. Everything was in place that March when COVID hit the United States, and by mid-March, everything was shut down. I was devastated. We had planned for so long and for so many hours to hold our week-long celebration. By mid-April, we realized we would have to hold a virtual program by Zoom. My 4 graduate students did an amazing job of accommodating our new situation. Each grant organization asked what we needed, so we put a new budget together and asked if they could cover our costs for the virtual program. Every one of them agreed. Of the 55 athletes who had signed up, 26 decided they would still come to camp virtually. In addition to our graduate students and undergraduate assistant, we hired our dedicated specialists and group leaders who had to dig deep when writing their lesson plans and teaching in this format. In 2020 and 2021, we had Erin Shino, Emily Gilbert, Dorothy Niemeyer, Jessica Parfit, Lizzie Weaver, Allie Weaver, Erin Mama Weaver, Rachel Sherman, Sarah Copenhaver, Peter Reifenberg, Matt Farwell, Jasmine Bradwell, Kelsey Salmon, Tina Iannaccino, Eric Tuttle, Kyle Tyrone, and Alex Stribbing, my incredible assistant director. We had to ask permission to go on campus with masks to bag and box all of the equipment we had ordered for each athlete. We labeled each box Free Matter for the Blind, which fortunately gave us a reduced rate for shipping. Otherwise, it would have been $70 per box. So by June 10th, each virtual camper received a camp in a bag with a chart explaining the contents. Camp in a bag equipment. Campabilities bag, sports bag. Jingle balls. Beaded jump rope. A beach ball. Bell basketball. Shot put. Discus. A yoga mat. A TheraBand. Carabiners. Blue braided rope. Guide wire rope. Bell soccer balls, and a talking pedometer. We offered goal ball, soccer, track and field, yoga, and fitness. We met with all participants for an hour on each of the 3 Wednesday nights before camp. During these meetings, we ensured they knew, 1, each other, 2, what they needed for the program, such as a wall for soccer, a pier to play one-on-one goal ball, etc. How to use the equipment in their box, and 4, that they would do best with a parent, sibling, or peer with them during the program. We divided the virtual campers into 4 groups of 5 or 6 athletes so the specialists for each sport could teach the group and then, along with the group leader, give each child feedback as they practiced on the Zoom screen. This worked for fitness, goal ball, basketball, and yoga. We told campers what space they needed for each activity. If they had a backyard, park, or driveway, they would go outside for some of the activities. If no large area was available, they adjusted in a recreation room, basement, or living room. First, the specialist would tell the campers what equipment to prepare. Next, they would explain the lesson in detail. For example, kick the bell soccer ball against the wall with the inside of your foot 10 times with control. Before campers began the activity, the specialist made sure each child's camera was positioned correctly, often with the help of a sibling or parent at home. Then, as each child practiced the skill, they received individual feedback from the specialist or group leader. I was amazed at the vast improvement in skills over the course of the week. Many of the children ran faster, threw farther, improved on their repetitions or times in fitness, and improved their soccer skills. They worked with siblings, neighbors, parents, and in some cases, alone. Sometimes special equipment helped. As an example, for soccer, each child received a soccer trainer. This was an elastic cord that hook and loop Velcro strapped at both ends. The strap at one end was fastened to the bell soccer ball. The strap at the other end went around the child's waist. This way, campers could practice dribbling, kicking, and shooting without losing the ball. The fitness program was based on the AMRAP principle, as many reps as possible, in 30 or 45 seconds. This approach lends itself well to children who are blind, as the routine remains the same. For example, athletes chose from wall sits, front lunges, or squats for legs, push-ups, planks, or wall push-ups for arms, sit-ups or leg lifts for abs, and jumping jacks or running in place for cardio. While they performed their chosen fitness activities, Dorothy, our fitness specialist, played fun music. She called her program Body by Dottie, a play on her nickname, Dottie. The kids absolutely loved this because Dottie is funny and has a thick Long Island accent, loud and generous with feedback. Body by Dottie became a common source of pride during Care to Share. At lunchtime, we discussed various topics, what books the kids were reading and what they were having for lunch, and how they made it, what songs they were listening to or learning to play on an instrument. Though the virtual format sometimes felt confining in that it limited conversations to one person speaking at a time, it offered a new way to highlight each individual athlete's personality and character. Everyone made new friends. Athletes were able to specialize in a sport of their choice each day in order to fine-tune the fundamentals. They could also choose from various non-sport activities such as makeup and hairstyling, public speaking and advocacy skills, cooking, sports nutrition, trivia, open mic such as singing, jokes, and playing instruments, and computer coding. We also zoomed in elite and Paralympic athletes throughout the week for inspiring talks and listened to how they were coping with the postponement of the 2020 Paralympics. We zoomed in young people of college age or recent graduates to discuss college advocacy, vocational advocacy, and advocacy in physical education and sports. At the final Care to Share, comments like these told me we had made it work despite the pandemic limitations. I'm most proud of running a mile in 13 minutes and 43 seconds. I am most proud of running a mile in 8 minutes and 10 seconds, and I'm also proud of improving the dribbles in five-a-side soccer. I made it across my grandparents' pool yesterday without having to stop. Lastly, with camp, I've learned what I want to continue through the summer. So Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I'll do Body by Dottie. Tuesdays and Thursdays, I want to do soccer, and I will do a mile once in a while, too. Continuing virtual in 2021. As 2020 turned into 2021, and much looked the same, we learned we could not have any practicum programs on campus, and our college professional preparation students could not go off campus to earn their practicum hours either. So I decided to implement something called the Campabilities Virtual Personal Best Program for the entire spring semester. This virtual practicum, which would take place over 3 months, paired young athletes with undergraduates in PE, teacher education programs across the Northeast. Each pair was required to meet a minimum of once a week for 60 minutes to work on fitness. However, they could choose the virtual platform, when to meet, how often, above the minimum, and what physical activities to work on. The program started with an opening ceremony attended by the athletes, their parents, and their one-on-one coach, and included an explanation of the virtual practicum. At this time, each athlete also completed a short fitness assessment consisting of 4 components: duration of a wall sit, number of push-ups, number of sit-ups, and duration of a plank. 6 weeks into the program, we did a group check-in where athletes could share what they'd been doing and what they were proud of. The 4 fitness components were also reassessed to determine improvement. At this check-in, we brought in elite athletes to share their stories of their journeys into elite sports. The last week of the program consisted of a closing ceremony in which every athlete completed their final fitness assessment and shared their accomplishments. Another elite athlete then shared his accomplishments and provided words of wisdom for future success. My students were able to help children improve on everything from general fitness to basketball, yoga, tai chi, jiu-jitsu, soccer, dancing, and running. One of the athletes in the program, Andrew Mead Colgrove, the boy on the cover of the book, was on the U.S. blind ice hockey team, so his student coach went out to Buffalo and rented ice time to practice ice hockey with him. Andrew also came to Brockport and played hockey with several of our students. The virtual personal best program was a big hit with most athletes and their coaches. This was an inexpensive and individualized program I could replicate even after the pandemic. In February 2021, we made the difficult decision to hold Campabilities virtually again in the summer. We were fortunate enough to receive grants from the same funders who felt our continued pain. We replicated our program with a few additions. We swapped out goalball with basketball. We also gave each child a talking pedometer as well as an iPad provided by the New York Commission for the Blind. We managed some silver linings about the 2021 virtual camp. For one, we zoomed in Jason Romero, the first person with a visual impairment to run across the United States, and in just 60 days, the 7th fastest time overall. Romero wrote a wonderful book called Running into the Dark, in which he described his adventure. We were also fortunate enough to zoom in Martha Ruther, who informed us she had made the U.S. swim team for the 2021 Paralympics in Tokyo. We learned many lessons during the pandemic, but let's hope we don't have to do it again. Kenya Campabilities. When I returned from my sabbatical in 2019, I was eager to continue making connections abroad, including in parts of the world where Campabilities might present special challenges. In 2015, while running the Beat Baseball World Series, I had met Helen Kiprono, an amazing athlete from Kenya, who was a member of the Rochester, New York Pioneers Beat Baseball team. Before moving to Rochester, Helen had been on the Kenyan Paralympic track team. In the summer of 2017, she came to Campabilities with the Beat Baseball team to give a demonstration. She absolutely loved camp and respected the concept of promoting sports for youth with visual impairments. In 2018, Helen spoke of starting a Campabilities in Kenya. Her sister, Lois, also blind, still lived in Kenya, and Helen had many siblings, nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles, and friends in Kenya who supported our vision. So when I returned from sabbatical, we started a Campabilities Kenya board. We were just getting our non-for-profit status when COVID hit. We continued to meet and write grants and plan the program. We had our eyes on Kakuma Refugee Camp, which housed more than 196,000 refugees from Sudan, Somalia, and Ethiopia, including 700 children with visual impairments. We sent them equipment and did a virtual training for their staff, but soon we realized that providing a program for over 700 youth would be extremely daunting. We then set our sights on the Carrera School for the Blind in Bomet County, about 130 miles west of Nairobi. We were all set for July of 2021 when COVID spiked again in Kenya and part of the country shut down. We rescheduled for August. We wrote and received a generous grant from the Webster Lions Club from Webster, New York. This is Helen's Lions Club, and they believed in our vision. The logistics of getting visas, COVID tests, yellow fever shots, malaria pills, and all of our equipment was close to a full-time job. But we managed to get four from our board: Helen, Helen's good friend Tiffany Bryant, Judy McKnight from the Webster New York Lions Club, and myself, to fly to Nairobi and make the camp happen. Helen also recruited her nephews, her sister Lois, and many friends who live in Nairobi. She has an incredible network. We arrived in Nairobi at 8:30 p.m., and Tiffany and I stayed with Helen's sister, Anna, who would prove to be supportive and helpful through our entire trip. At 5:30 the next morning, we set off with Helen and her cousin on the five-hour drive through rural Kenya to the school. We passed many cows, chickens, sheep, donkeys, and goats, not only alongside the road, but on the road. We sometimes had to stop to let them cross. When we arrived at the school, the headmaster showed us around. The school was on a two-way, busy street in a rural community. A barbed wire fence divided the school for the blind from the middle school next door. Down a driveway made of dirt and large rocks was a very small building with offices for the headmaster and one staff member. This is where we would have our meetings and daily tea. There was a small hall with wooden floors and a stage that was large enough for about 50 students to practice singing and dancing. Several smaller wooden structures contained wooden benches, a blackboard, and seats for classrooms. A small field provided a volleyball court and an area to run or play soccer. I checked out the girls' dorm and found 18 bunk beds in a tiny area. Two girls slept in each bed, which meant 72 girls were sleeping in minuscule space with no bathroom or showers. Each girl had one small chest in which to keep their clothes and belongings. On the edge of the school, down a dirt path past a small garden with corn, were several outhouses with pit toilets. Uneven dirt paths led to each building, and in the middle of one path was a power line cable stretched diagonally across. The students did not use canes, so they had to memorize each path and the accompanying rocks and obstacles. The headmaster expressed excitement about our program and offered wholehearted support. He had taken good care of the equipment we had shipped him the month before, prepared his faculty, who would act as staff for the camp, and invited school board members to come see us in action. Once we arrived, he welcomed us with presents from Kenya, gave the teachers time to work with us, and ensured we had chai tea with milk each day. Drinking chai accompanied by cookies or muffins in the morning, with lunch, and in the afternoon was a prevalent custom in Kenya. The students were very excited to see us, surrounding our car and greeting us with big smiles. They knew we were going to hold a sports camp. Their previous sports involvement had been somewhat limited by lack of equipment and space. Volleyball and soccer were played only by the students with some vision, so students who were blind had been left out. I could not help but notice that the clothes of the children were thin and torn. Their shoes consisted of flip-flops or plastic sandals worn thin. They actually ran in them pretty well. I could not help thinking they may have been able to run better with sneakers. I believe they probably did not know any different, but we noticed that their clothes and shoes could be more functional. I tried to avoid white savior syndrome, but our nature is always to help if we can. One of our fellow lions, Al Merrill, collected 100 pairs of shoes and several suitcases full of clothes. Helen brought them to the school on her next trip to Kenya. At least they would then have choices. Surveying the grounds, we identified the small field with the volleyball net as our location for goalball and field events. We decided to hold the track and the fitness at the general school next door, as their field was bigger, and we spotted a road for the cross-country run right next to the school for the blind. We felt ready for camp to begin the following day. When we arrived the next morning, the staff, which included 10 student teachers in addition to the regular school staff, were busy setting up the venues for the sports. To help us with track and field, we also had a champion runner named Caroline, 35 years old, tall, thin, and very athletic, who had been a running guide for Lois and Helen. The staff had carefully drawn four lines on a 100-meter track with white chalk powder, making sure the lines were thick enough for students with low vision to see. They also carefully put up a guide wire in the center of the track. They used more chalk to line a goalball court on the field and created a shot put and discus throwing ring as well. The only trouble with the throwing ring was its close proximity to where the school kept four cows. Not only were these cows clearly in danger of getting hit with a discus, but they had also left cow patties all over the throwing area. When I mentioned this to the headmaster, he immediately agreed to move the cows. 20 minutes later, they were gone. And the cow patties? I had to ask again. Two little boys, about 7 years old, soon appeared with a wheelbarrow and a shovel as big as they were. The little boys worked diligently and efficiently, picking up the hard cow patties with their hands and shoveling the softer dung piles. When they were done, they wheeled the wheelbarrow to a small patch of corn and dumped the huge load of dung there. Then they dusted off their hands and put the wheelbarrow away. Off they went, job completed. It seemed a routine task for them, and the field was ready. The goalball court was well delineated with white chalk powder, but there were no tactile markings for the kids who were blind to feel the perimeter. We had to think quickly. We decided to use large nails hammered in flush with the ground on each corner. We then tied thin rope to each nail so campers could feel the ropes when they were playing. I had never made a goalball court like this before, but it worked well. Everyone gathered in the field of the school next door for the opening ceremonies. To open the program, the staff did one ceremonial lap around the field singing a Kenyan national song in Swahili. We then introduced everyone and discussed the purpose of camp abilities. I talked about not letting people in society put limits on what you can do. I explained that the camper's success in sports could show people in the community the potential of people who are blind and visually impaired. I taught them the motto, "Believe you can achieve," sharing the example of Helen throwing the shot put and beating her record. We then divided the athletes into three groups, track and field, fitness, and goalball. As leader of the fitness group, I had them stretch and then work on planks for time, sit-ups, push-ups, jumping jacks, jump rope, and squats. I picked these activities because they took up little space and were easy to measure in time. I was lucky to have two student teachers, Nancy Aroa and Winnie, working with me. They were energetic and funny, and the kids responded much more enthusiastically to their Swahili than to my English. The campers worked really hard. Next, I taught them how to do inversions, frog stand, headstands, and handstands. They loved this and pushed themselves to increase the time they could hold each inversion. Halfway through the morning, I saw a man walking down the entrance to the school with two live chickens. He had bought them from the woman I had seen on the way to the school, standing on the side of the road with 10 or so free-range chickens. He told me the chickens were our lunch. I thought, can it get more fresh or organic than this? The large school next door, where we held the track and fitness events, had several hundred students between the ages of about 6 to 14. At every break, the students would surround our camp, pointing and staring. It became difficult to instruct. We had to talk louder and louder to make our voices heard. This was annoying, but we kept going. I took a few minutes to go watch the goalball games, the running at the track, and the discus and shot put taught by Helen. Everything was going smoothly, and we were about to switch activities for the hour before lunch when the headmaster came over and said we had to break for tea. The children must have tea for their strength. How could we argue? So we had our chai tea and muffins, then we switched stations. One of the hardest things was that only 36 of the 146 children at the school were chosen for our camp. Since the teachers were helping the camp, they were not available to teach or even supervise the other 110 kids who stood around watching and listening longingly from the sidelines. The logistics were tough, but I felt awful we could not accommodate everyone. I tried to be friendly with the other kids so they didn't feel so left out. I saw one girl smiling at me. I said hi and asked her name. The headmaster came over and told me the girl had an intellectual disability in addition to her visual impairment. Yes, I responded, but what is her name? Then he said that in addition to her visual impairment and intellectual disability, she had autism. Yes, I repeated, but does she have a name? He finally told me her name was Justine. I think it mystified him that I would want to get to know someone with Justine's level of disability. Of course, he knew that I valued a high level of performance in sport and encouraged campers and others to make active contributions to society. And yet, I wanted him to know, and Justine to know, that I valued her as much as her peers. I would have loved to give her access to sports that day. When it was time to close the day with Care to Share, rain started to pour. We moved into the auditorium, but the rain was so loud on the tin roof that we had to postpone until the following day. We had a short meeting with the teachers to discuss how the day had gone. Everyone felt it had gone well, with the exception of the starting and loud talking by the children from the school next door. We learned that the children in this rural part of Kenya rarely saw white people, so they were staring at Judy, Tiffany, and me. The headmaster said he would ask the head of the other school to tell the kids not to come so close. The next day, when we arrived, what I saw on the open field made me so happy. About 30 children doing headstands, handstands, and frog stands and counting how long they could stay up. They were so excited about challenging themselves, they started working before camp even began. Caroline, the track and field coach, and I went to map a 2-kilometer out and back cross-country route on the adjacent road, which had some rocks, roots, and uneven surfaces. We thought this was a good distance for the kids to see if they liked it. Most of the children knew little outside of their small homes and this residential school. Like Ghana, Kenya does not have many open roads, tracks, or other spaces to run safely, and we were excited to provide this opportunity. The students who were blind would have a guide, and the ones with enough vision would run independently. After opening ceremonies, we reviewed the success from the day before and asked campers to set goals for the day ahead. Then everyone moved excitedly to their stations. The cross-country groups simply amazed me, running the 2K track faster than any first-time runners I had ever seen, as low as 9 minutes for this 1.2-mile course. For comparison, a good mile time for a 10-year-old boy is 8 minutes. These kids clearly love the feeling of running freely with no barbed wire fence like the one surrounding the school and no obstacles other than the rocks and roots. It was a revelation to them that this road existed right next to their school. We learned later that people who lived on the road told the teachers they did not know children who were blind could run. The cross-country course was a game changer for everyone. It seemed everyone took their game up a notch today. Goal ball was made even more exciting by a teacher who acted as an announcer so that campers who were blind knew what was going on with each play. This kept everyone's interest. The kids who were waiting were just itching to be part of the game and have their performances broadcast. Over at track and field, Helen helped the discus and shot put throwers with their form, and someone with a tape measure announced the distance of each throw to loud cheers from campers watching from the sidelines. The campers who were throwing or jumping were concentrating hard, and the ones watching were planning their goals for their turns. The atmosphere was electric. At the fitness station, we reviewed the children's times for each activity. At one point, three boys and one girl did wall sits for 10 minutes. A good wall sit time is 4 minutes. I was astounded. At the end of the day, rain was not falling, so we had the opportunity to do Care to Share. It was very powerful in this religious, mainly Christian country for us to hear every child thank God for the opportunity to attend our camp. The campers shared in Swahili what they were proud of, so we had one of the teachers translate. A boy named Gati said he had scored 4 goals in goalball and had not let one ball get past him in the game. He wanted to keep practicing so he could play on the national team for Kenya one day. A girl named Aluna said she had run 2 kilometers for the first time ever in 9 minutes. Caroline, the track and field coach, after telling campers she was going to be an official at the Kenyan National Track and Field Championships in Nairobi, fielded many questions. Were they good enough to compete? They asked. Definitely, said Caroline. If they worked hard enough. Aluna took Caroline's challenge to heart and set her sights on decreasing her time enough to qualify. After Care to Share, we held a huge party with Kenyan dance music. Among the many amazing dancers, one boy stood out, Raruhu, who had albinism, wore a bucket hat, and did twirls and breakdancing like someone in a dance contest. While we were in the auditorium, I noticed the kids who are not in our camp staring at us longingly through the window. They had found chairs to stand on in order to see. The students who had some sight were describing what was happening to the kids who were blind, and everyone could certainly hear the excitement and activity of our program. The marginalization of the majority of the kids made me feel really bad. And so the next day, our last day, we let all the kids join us. Yes, it was crowded, but we felt much better letting everyone do the sports and not leaving anyone out. The group that ran the cross-country course cut their times considerably, and some of the kids had 2K times close to 7 minutes. This shows the power of opportunity. I was thrilled imagining what could happen if these athletes could run on a regular basis. We met a woman from the Ministry of Education who said she would have the cross-country road smoothed out so children could practice there safely. That was great news. The one hard part was that we really did not have enough staff to oversee all of the students. Since it was a weekend, we did get to use the school next door for the fitness activities. My student teachers and I had a large group doing yoga poses, planks, push-ups, lunges, sit-ups, and of course, inversions. The kids had a great time challenging themselves and showing the campers who had not been there how to do the exercises. When it was time to walk back to the blind school, we had to walk all the way down the driveway of the general school and then up the driveway of the school for the blind. One of the athletes, Visola, was blind and did not have a guide, so she was struggling behind. There were so many children that we did not realize she was missing. The front of the group was singing loudly, and they were on the other side of the barbed wire fence. Visola turned to catch up with the group following the sound, but got caught up in the weeds and barbed wire fence. I was singing and walking back to make sure everyone was all right and found Visola stuck in the weeds with a cut on her hand. I felt absolutely awful about this oversight. Next time, I would like to have more staff to ensure each child is safe and supported. This was a hard lesson for us all. The closing ceremony made a tremendous impression on me. So many people came from so far away, and each was truly inspired by our program. Helen had invited many of her siblings, cousins, aunts, uncles, and friends, all of whom contributed to our rich experience in Kenya. Her father, who sold tea, had donated some to us. Her cousins, who drove us all from the airport and to the school, would later take us to a safari. Her sister Anna helped us significantly in the past 2 days of camp, and of course Lois co-directed the camp with Helen. I was grateful to see local dignitaries and Lions clubs make donations to the school. The kids sang and cheered and said they would continue to work on their sports. The headmaster committed to twice a week cross-country practice and making the field next to the volleyball court the official goalball court. Now that they had the equipment, the children could regularly play goalball and blind soccer as part of their physical education. We had not played soccer at camp due to space limitations, but we donated the official five-a-side soccer balls to the school. I felt gratified to see the impact we had made on the children and the community. The teachers, staff, administration, and even town residents now understood how to make sports accessible to children with visual impairment, and everyone saw how wonderful sports can be in motivating students and helping them to feel accomplished. The skill of setting goals can, of course, be generalized to other areas of children's lives. Sports can also be a vehicle for helping students feel valued and integrating them into society. To cap off our Kenya experience, several of us traveled to Masai Mara Wildlife Reserve for an incredible safari and then visited a Maasai village. I had never seen an indigenous African tribe in their natural environment. Their clothes were made of beads, feathers, and colorful fabric. Their homes were made of dung, dirt, and hay. They showed us their weapons, musical instruments, and cookware. They even demonstrated how they make fire with two pieces of wood. We watched in amazement as they danced for us, the men jumping unusually high into the air. I felt very proud of our team for our resilience through COVID, our ability to pivot and create such an amazing program after disappointments and setbacks says a lot about our future potential. Nothing was easy about our Kenya adventure. We ran into so many restrictions, and yet we made the program happen. This journey with Camp Abilities and youth with visual impairments has led me to meet incredible people and travel to all corners of the earth. I continue to encounter more and more people who believe in the power of sports for children who are visually impaired. I see children in many countries who have so much potential. They just need a place to learn how to access it. They need people in their lives to learn and understand how to make sports accessible to them, to make activity part of their lives. They must learn to advocate for what they need in order to make this happen. Camp Abilities can teach them.